might have heard me tell the story before about Ralph Waldo Emerson. When early in his adult life, he decided to leave the Unitarian ministry. It's said that he left the church he was serving because of his discomfort leading the then regular practice of the Holy Communion. His congregation urged him to stay anyway. It's okay, stay. He declined. There's a quote that's made famous in my clergy circles, maybe because of our, at times, weariness, where Emerson said, "I like the silent church before the service begins better than any preaching." One could interpret his comment any number of ways, and Unitarian ministers of Emerson's day did tend to yammer on. They did. They went on it, probably out of a sense of duty or righteousness. But my understanding is that Waldo appreciated the direct experience of mystery and wonder found in the quiet, cavernous space of and the place of the church meeting room more than what it felt like when it was filled up, or when he or any other preacher was trying to explicate it, that feeling, or God in mere words. Or maybe he simply felt uncomfortable around so many people. Recent statistics have shown that church attendance across the continent is down. Not in any particular branch of Christianity, and not because what is happening on Sunday mornings is any less meaningful or well executed than it was 10 or 20 years ago. But what has changed is culture. Weekends, right? We have way more to accomplish and less time in which to do it. And we have only the same amount of hours. And I want to know what the heck happened to that hour that we got last week. Like, it seems like it just disappeared. And yet, you are here. What brings you? Why do you come week after week when you could listen to good music in your car? Or you could catch the sermon on the podcast. Did you know that? You could get better coffee from a barista. Actually, I want to say, our coffee? I was just checking to see if you were listening. The song is Listen. Actually, our coffee is pretty darn great. It's fair trade coffee, too, for that matter. Fair trade, meaning we're doing something for sustainability and economic justice. Maybe that is why you come. And music just doesn't sound the same recorded, right? It doesn't. And you can't have those unexpected interactions in the parking lot if you don't show up. Or you can't buy tamales to support someone in sanctuary. My colleague in Minnesota, Victoria Safford, tells a great story about something she noticed and appreciated. So I'm going to tell her story today. She says, "I knew a man once who came to church every Sunday. You may find nothing remarkable in this, but think of it. A man who came every single Sunday, and it was not that he lacked better things to do." She said, "I knew him only in the last years of his life, a birthright Unitarian, a retired geologist who, when he was not at church, He was a volunteer for Amnesty International, also for the local food bank, for the American Civil Liberties Union, for the Family Planning Clinic, the AIDS Project, for the Unitarian Universalist District that we were a part of, for the Audubon Society, and for a splendid community chorus. Busier than any of us still holding full-time jobs, he was committed, effective, clear about what he could and would, and by his own standards, should contribute to the causes he cared for, the world and the people he cared for. But what set him apart from all of us was that he came every single Sunday. And because of maybe hearing loss, I think, more than any sense of his own importance, he sat in the front row. "Why do you come, John? In all kinds of weather, when you're well and when you're not, when you're the guest speak, when you like the guest speaker and when you know you won't. Why do you come every Sunday?" I asked him just not long before he died. His answer was straightforward, just like the man himself. "I come," he said, "because somebody might miss me if I didn't." He said it in a way not arrogant at all, but generously, honestly. He was the kind of person who saw it as his duty and his privilege to welcome newcomers on Sunday morning, not because he needed more friends himself. The man was 80 years old with a lifetime of friends and colleagues and acquaintances to spare. He had plenty of friends already, more than he could handle. He did it not because he wanted to evangelize the visitors or grow the church. On the contrary, he loved and missed the tiny congregation he joined in 1955. He felt a little lost with all the new faces, a little sad at all the changes. He greeted people as they came and steered them toward the minister, the coffee pot, the Sunday school, the guest book, the pledge cards, the sign-up sheets, because he felt it was the right and the only thing to do. When people come into your home, you welcome them as if nothing else in that moment matters more. He worked hard on Sunday mornings. He got up on Sundays expecting to work hard and make others feel at home. He came with that in mind. And he was right. After he died, we missed him when he didn't come. And you know what happened? The Sunday after his memorial, someone new, who'd never met John and now would never have the chance, walked right in and sat down in his empty space in the front row. A whole family just sat right down as if they'd owned the place, and as if they had a right to be there, as if we were glad to see them. Two women new to town and their toddler and their baby. They came hoping there was room, and John himself would have been delighted. I've been saying a lot lately that what we do here is countercultural. And yet today I'm not speaking about our brand in religion in particular. I'm thinking that taking time from the rest of the week to do something that is not, for all intents and purposes, a commodity is countercultural. But we can fall easily into that trap. I caught myself doing it just this week when I told you to come for the message, come for the choir, the faith formation. All those reasons sets us up to be another place for consumerism. whether it is a program, a gift, something to receive, then why come as an antidote to commodification? Because this is spiritual work, not competition, not capitalism. We love having flowers for worship on Sunday. Here they are, all gorgeous and orange back there today. And we have a sign-up sheet. We have both a hard copy on a little board here. What am I trying to say? Our little clipboard. Listen, you know it. We also have an online version for you to share your flowers, even if you share them just for a couple of hours and take them back home again. Why do people bring them? It's a great way to name a joy or a sorrow, to celebrate or remember. Flowers bring the natural world inside and offer uplifting life energy. They're not an endorsement of an element of the service or how good the sermon is expected to be. We can sometimes struggle, those of us who take part in leading services week after week. Okay, me, I can. It can be a heavy lift, especially after a Sunday that went particularly well. I take comfort in the words quoted in the classic introductory text called A Chosen Faith, a text that is co-authored by Reverend John Burens. He cites a letter that Flannery O'Connor composed to her friend who rejected organized religion. O'Connor wrote, "It is easy for any child to pick out the faults in the sermon on his or her way home from church every Sunday. It is impossible for him to find out the hidden love that makes a person, in spite of intellectual limitations, neuroticism, or lack of strength, give one's life to the service of God's people, however bumblingly one may go about it." I take comfort, and I never know what has happened to someone who may need what I bring that particular day. I am grateful to you who are present today. Thankful to those who come for spiritual practice because somebody might just miss you. And rather because of the sermon title or the topic or because of any one particular element. And you know, as I finish here today, because we do miss people when they don't come, I'd like to ask you to make a special effort to reach out to a person you haven't seen here in a while. Not to make them feel guilty about not coming, no, but to remind them of the value of community, or to find out if their health is okay, to see if their spirits are well, to invite them to come with you next week, to remind them of why you came this week. I love you so. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen. What struck you today?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we got complimented on our music.
Yes.
And courtesy of stand-in for Paul Simon over there.
No, nice job.
What else? Everybody. Oh, somebody asked me the words, you know, what language it was. And it was Zulu.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to show her what they're, because she wants to know what the translation is. So who was I talking to? I don't know, but she wanted to see the actual translation, so I've got my songbook.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always enjoyable being in the choir.
It's terrific. And I know that Elizabeth did the arrangement for that piece, too.
I think the thing that stood out for me was the fact that he came to church because somebody might miss him. And it was reminiscent of a quote that I have actually hanging on my refrigerator. It says, what you do may seem insignificant, but it is most important that you do it. And so I don't think he fully understood his role. Maybe he did, and that's why he came all the time. But it's like, oh, I can come, I cannot come. It's like, no, it's important what you do and what you pay attention mm-hmm. to. I just like that concept.
Yeah, and what about the whole thing about thinking about going on Sunday that, as coming to worship as a commodity?
Concept of that, but anything that's consumed is a commodity. So we're consuming all the,
Well, I mean, that's one way mm-hmm. to look at it.
Yeah.
Or it depends on how you approach it, though, right?
Yeah. And I never really thought of it that way. But it's true. But it's all, I mean, there's good consumption, there's bad consumption. There's, good commodities, bad commodities. So.
I mean, I guess you could think of it. I mean, I don't really think about it this way, but I guess a person could think of it as a tick mark. Like, okay, I exercised, checked. I went to church, check. I got my spiritual, check. These little boxes, I wanted to mention that just this morning I was trying to convince Zoelle to come. She's my 13-year-old who mm-hmm. hasn't been coming.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I gave her that she should come is because people will miss her. That she's an important part of this community. She may not realize it, but because I'm a mother, the kids are precious in this community. And when the kids are not seen week after week, then there's a sense of loss. And that did not convince her. But and I don't know if she thought I was making it up, but I really truly believe that.
Yeah, and maybe it could be something to share with her when you get home that indeed that's what we talked about today.
For those of you that just came, we were talking about the message about religion being a commodity or their service being a commodity. Your perspective on that?
Well, or I guess I would say what I was preaching today was the non-commodification of attendance. Yes. How did today strike you for those who just came in? Maybe something in particular that came up for you.
Yeah, I really like the theme of listen. So important to listen. And I know when someone listens to me, oh my God, I feel like a person, like mm-hmm. like I'm seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that it was brought into it to listen with your eyes. It isn't just a matter of hearing with your ears. All of your senses hear in a different way. And the fact that that was folded into that thought was powerful. It was great. Thank you. The whole service really was a big round ball. It was great. It worked.
I particularly like the concept of letting people and even animals know that you see them. And I had read something about that many years ago. So when my cat tries to get my attention, I look him in the eye and say, I see you, so that he knows that he has my undivided attention. Mm-hmm.
Does he tap you on the shoulder, Betty?
More on the face.
On the face. And it was wonderful the way the final song by the choir reinforced that. You know, I know frequently the choir does the surround sound, but they all stood there and looked right at us for quite a while to reinforce that. And it also reinforced we're a community. We are surrounding you. We're holding you in our attention. So the coordination of all the elements of the service was excellent, I thought.
Good.
Well, I read a book of a couple of years ago. I think it was called The Elephant Whisperer, and you were, there was this one elephant that he wanted to be seen by this man who had befriended them, or maybe it was a woman. And until this person realized what it was, he wanted to be go, I see you, you know? He had become friends, and he wanted to be acknowledged, like, that's all he wanted. I see you? Okay, now you can go on with your business.
I thought it was interesting that factoid about people not going to church because they have too many other things to do, because that's definitely been the case for me, my sensation. And I just thought, oh, it's because I work too much or I'm a busy mom or something. And I kind of wonder whether, is it true that people, you know, the congregations are aging? It seems like that people who are retired would have the most free time.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that makes sense, Tara, but and so that what I was just reading, the statistics that I just looked at weren't broken out by age. It's just a general, like general population. And so, and there are some things I've read recently that said, so for people that went 4 weeks a month, they go three times a month. And for people that go three times a month, maybe they go twice a month. For the person, you know, the other person, like everybody's just a little bit less. And I do think that there are just more, regardless of age, so the retired people in here could speak for that, that would say, my schedule has gotten fuller. Yeah. And the other thing I noticed, like from when I was a child, was that there weren't other things scheduled on Sunday mornings. The grocery store was not even open when I was a kid. That so that was a particular thing during that time where, you know, society was valuing doing some sort of spiritual work on Sunday mornings rather than, again, consumerism. Right, rather than shopping, or I mean, around here where we live, it isn't always consumerism. Where in some other places, in other cities, probably some of those things are more consumer, but they also could be competition related. Like when you think, what are things that that are competing for our time on Sundays? On Sunday mornings in particular, what would you say are things that are competing for your time? Outdoor activities. Because, but why would they compete for your time on Sunday morning? Oh, in other words, things that are scheduled activities that are not making any accommodation for a worship time. Here, let's do the microphone just because then that gets recorded.
Families with children in the elementary and middle school are traveling all the way to Phoenix
for
Albuquerque.
Like
soccer. It is wild. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Tara?
I think it's a huge waste of gas. And also these people have to get hotel rooms. If it's not related, if it's not through the school district, which pays for everything, then they're forking out all this money to go on these trips, and it's multiple trips per fall. I don't know how people can afford it.
Yeah.
A couple things I'd like to mention. One of them is I recently heard on NPR that They had a segment about 5-10 minute segments why people go to church, and they were talking really about stress and people's lives related to church. They found out that through interviews of a lot of people, I mean, the number was 1,000, it wasn't 13, but people with who do attend church have remarkably lower stress in their lives. And then the question is, do they have lower stress because they do other things and also go to church, or do they go to church and find out that the church... And this was a study that covered various denominations. Mm-hmm. The other thing I might mention is another word, but for things that are, you might say, necessary, but are commodities like food or like pleasure. Like, is your point a little bit was, are we... What's the word? Commoditization of church services for their music, et cetera, et cetera. Is there another word for those things like pleasure or peacefulness or things like that for commodities, and that one could say is commodities, but they're things that bring peace and love, et cetera, et cetera, or maybe food?
Yeah, so what would you say?
You're talking to me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would call it pleasure. Pleasure that has its roots in peace and love.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what other people say. Like today in the sermon, I talked about rather, you know, is how about a spiritual practice? That's something you do as a spiritual practice. And you can also do that with other things. That, like, I have made a spiritual practice out of doing laundry. I don't always do it that way, but my intention is to do it that way. And I notice that I have a greater appreciation of it rather than a frustration with it. And I will also tell you where I got the idea to do this sermon. Like, when you think, like, where do you come up with the ideas or how do you decide what to preach on? That a while back, I'm in a group, and someone had put in there that the folks who brought flowers on Sundays, that's why it had the flower piece, but also I was helping out Judy. Judy has the clipboard, okay, or she can tell you how to sign up online to bring flowers. This was not the case for this congregation. I think people are fabulous, and they bring flowers because it adds beauty, or because you can recognize someone, you know, like, or an anniversary or someone that you loved or your mother or that kind of thing. But there was someone in a place that far, far away from here who they didn't want to bring flowers until they knew who was going to be in the pulpit.
Oh, yeah, right, right. That's too bad.
Yes. What? No, that's what I'm saying. Far, far away from a land we will never know, of a place of a people we do not understand. However, we do often understand that idea of coming to something as a consumer, right? Even when we get to pledge time, the stewardship about the congregation, we didn't talk about money, but when we think, oh, how much money will I give to the congregation this year? That sometimes we tend to think about, like, what are the programs I'm receiving? And there is a way to think about receiving without thinking of it in as a consumer way. But also, we can take that same idea about stewardship and think about what we're doing is actually is giving to make something more meaningful for the world. Okay, now I talked too much, and I was asking some questions. And
I just want to say that's one of the Buddhist teachings, too, modified to be applicable to current culture, is that as you wash the dishes, think about
that's
doing
right.
The laundry, wash the dishes.
Yep, doing the, right, a Buddhist idea.
Hey there. I wrote a biography on a Southern U elder, Russell Buck Sr., and he talks about this in there, actually. I don't know if you remember that. He talks about how when he was going through his divorce, Christianity saved him from drinking, swearing, and smoking overnight. Then 2 years later, that same Baptist preacher who helped him when he was going through a divorce was kind of telling him it was all his fault and all these horrible things and kind of kicking. He felt like it was a dog laying on his back kicking. He was getting kicked. That's how he describes it. And so he said, but did that turn me off from church? Because that really helped, his conversion helped him to go to the Bible and learn, you know, really learn a lot and stay sober. So what he said was, why do we go to church? And he said, is it to impress others? Is it because I'm dressing up or is it this? He said, no. He said, I go to church to feed my spirit. And I mean, that just hit me even when I heard it and I was sitting there listening to him. And I go, that's exactly right. He said, that's why I go. And he said, and I still go into the churches to feed my spirit. That's why I'm there. And then he starts talking to me. This didn't make the book, but we started having a kind of a private conversation about, he said the elders would say, he said they had a saying and they would say, and he said it in Ute, and he said, what it means is, are you just walking? And I go, wow. And he goes, in other words, are you just walking on this planet or are you connected to your spirit? And I go, wow, Russell. I mean, it's, I think those two go hand in hand. If you're connected, you're coming to feed your spirit and you want to do all these, you know, you want to be part of the good that's going mm-hmm. on. And if you're not, you're just kind of just walking blindly, you know, without that connection to yourself, you know, that you need. But
I'm always confused why people associate sin with drinking, and that's fine. If they want to do that, that's all right. But it's so obvious that lots of places in the Bible, Jesus turns the water into wine.
I don't know how to follow that. Let's get together and have a drink sometime. But what I was going to say, when you're talking about your spiritual practice with doing your laundry, that sort of thing, I got onto this a long time ago, when I was in school. I don't quite know where the idea came from, but it makes life a heck of a lot more fun. And that is thinking that everything we see has a spirit. The chair you're sitting in has a spirit. And you don't understand that spirit entirely because you're not a chair. Mm-hmm. But it likes to have people sit on it. And thinking of everything as having a spirit, this is easy to apply to plants and living things, but it's made me respect everything. You treat everything kindly, and it just makes life really nice. So that's just a game I play that's rather enjoyable.
I want to say that's not a game, that's a spiritual practice.
And I also see, sorry, way back there too. Okay. Go ahead, Terry, sorry.
Just a quick insert. When I first started coming to this church, which was not too long ago, I came because I thought I should. It's like, oh, I should go to church. Very quickly, and that says a lot about the nature of this church. It became a want to. I find myself drawn to it. And so if people aren't showing up at church as much, I wonder if that desire, if they can't see how that spirituality is serving them. Because to me, this is my reset point. Life kind of bashes me around all week, and then I get reset here. So it's not about commodities. And you're all going to want to go to my gym after this, because there's another sign in the wall of my gym when you were talking that came to mind, and it said, it's this actually talking again, it's about physical stuff. person, a man sitting in the doctor's office, and the doctor says, so which serves your schedule, your busy schedule today? 1 hour of working out or 24 hours of being dead? And if you take that same thing and apply spirituality to it, it's like it's about what do you pay attention to? Where is your priorities in your spiritual growth as well? So, and I'm going to go way back here.
So there are many things that we can do for personal spiritual practice, and that's one way, I think, to approach it. But I think there's something really unique and extra special about being together in community. And that's, for me, the reason to come to church, because of that being in community piece. It's so valuable. And it enhances whatever I might do personally as a spiritual practice.
Yeah, thanks, Teresa. There's my critique of Emerson, right? That he just quit going. And rather than thinking, and so this is in another era where there weren't soccer games in, he wasn't going there. He wasn't going shopping. He just, he writes about individualism a lot. I love Emerson. And yet, there are some critiques in that I think he sometimes forgot about some of that larger, but that we need each other or that someone might miss us. So I'm noticing it's 12, and I'm going to go to the new UU class. But I do want to say to you, and this is not just, I'm not making this up. There are people from this congregation that I am aware of who are not here because they're ill or because something went wrong or whatever. And I would hope you would reach out to them. It's one thing for me to reach out to them, but it's something else when it comes from someone in the congregation who's their friend or not even that close to them. So if there's someone that you know here that you haven't seen in a while, it would be a lovely community kind of thing if you could reach out to them and say, I miss you, and how are you? Because sometimes they're not here because they actually are ill. And I'm thinking of some people right now who haven't been here because they've been ill. And I think hearing from you would really make their day. And then there's one. Did you have a comment, Jory? So do you have a directory? You should. If you don't have one, there's a hard copy version sitting upstairs right behind the reception desk. Well, then just call the people that you do. Or ask somebody, you know that person, describe them and see if somebody else knows who they are. Thank you all very much.
I'm so glad that you came today. How was your class?
Good. Cool.
Are you appreciating something about writing your theme?